Hello, everyone. Welcome to Cracking Addiction. My name is Dr. Fergal Armstrong, and today we're going to change the format a little bit. It's just going to be me talking to you. And we're doing this because we've been asked to talk about what is the kind of science underpinning addiction, what actually happens to the brain. So I thought I'd take this opportunity to go through some of the underlying neuroscience and physiology about actually what's happening with addiction. So first of all, we need to understand that there's a huge difference between misuse of drugs and being addicted to drugs. A large number of people will misuse drugs and then stop and then get on with their lives. A much smaller number of people will then develop hazardous or harmful effects, and even smaller still will be the number of people who develop some form of dependence and cannot actually stop using, right? So there has to be an acknowledgement of almost the pyramid of substance use. We're at the very bottom. It's recreational, occasional users, and at the very top are people who just cannot get off it. So I'm focusing today on the underpinnings of why people cannot get off drugs. So I'm focusing today on the reasons why people cannot get off drugs. All addictive substances cause the nucleus accumbens to release dopamine. So the nucleus accumbens is a structure in the brain that mediates things like desire, sexual desire, the joy that you get from winning, the joy that you get from having a nice meal. Unfortunately, it also mediates psychosis. But dopamine is the key molecule there, and it's the molecule of wanting more, wanting to do the same thing again. It's not the molecule of satiety. It's not the molecule that says, I just want to calm down and sit still. It's the molecule that says, I want to move, I want more. All drugs that are misused in some way cause the nucleus accumbens to increase dopamine. Some directly and some indirectly. So examples of direct drugs that directly increase dopamine would include the stimulants, such as methamphetamine or cocaine, and the indirect drugs that increase dopamine indirectly include alcohol and heroin. So given that there is a pyramid in terms of the how people are affected by substances, it's important to understand that there is a vulnerability to addiction. And there are three key factors that play into this vulnerability. First of all, there are genetic factors. Then there are environmental factors. And then there are drug-specific factors. And we know roughly that 50% of all the vulnerability to addiction is genetic. And it's important to understand that that genetic risk is not one single gene. There are probably about 200 different genes, minor variations of which contribute to a total genetic risk for a specific addiction to a specific drug. And that risk will be different depending on which drug. But overall, we're looking at a roughly 50% genetic vulnerability. So just because your father or your mother had a problem with a substance use disorder does not necessarily mean that you're going to have the same problem, because you need the interplay between the nature and the nurture, the environmental factors. So if we move to environmental factors, we know that there are certain environments that increase the likelihood of someone not being able to stop drugs. So that falls into the definition of addiction. So we understand that certain childhood experiences, including trauma, can do that. We also know that early signs of aggressive behavior in an individual that denotes a lack of self-control, that can be a risk factor for addiction. A lack of parental supervision or a lack of a family support structure that supports and maintains a drug-free environment can be a problem. Substance abuse within the peer group. Drug availability at school, so lax school policies around substances at school can cause this or can cause someone to have an exposure and then suffer from addiction thereafter. And also, sadly, poverty. poverty is a risk factor for addiction. So that's one of the reasons why I see substance use disorders really as a symptom of social inequity and social injustice. So, you know, we know that the opposite of poverty in communities is strong neighborhood attachment. And we know that strong neighborhood attachments are protective from the risks of becoming addicted. So those are the environmental factors, or at least some of the environmental factors. Then we need to move to the drug per se. And we know that certain drugs are more likely to cause dependency after first exposure than others. And actually, interestingly, when I am asked what is the most addictive substance, the answer is not heroin. The answer is nicotine. Nicotine is the most addictive substance that we have. Approximately 1 in 3 people who are exposed to tobacco will then subsequently become dependent on tobacco. The next drug is heroin, and so that's approximately 1 in 4 or 1 in 5 people will get dependent on heroin. And then cocaine, we're talking about 1 in 6. Alcohol, we're talking about 1 in 7. Stimulants other than cocaine, so we're talking about methamphetamine here, 1 in 9. Cannabis, 1 in 9 to 1 in 11. Drugs that reduce anxiety or that make you sleep, so anxiolytics or hypnosedatives like benzodiazepines, that's a 1 in 11. And so there's a progression of the ability of a drug after first exposure to cause downstream dependence. So just to recap, those are the three key underpinning ideas that actually tell you what you need to think about when you're thinking about the question, why does addiction occur? You need to think about the genetic factors, you need to think about the environment, and you need to think about the drug-specific factors. Now, let's move on to the actual process of addiction. So we know that addiction is not a moral failing, it's not a poor choice, and certainly shouldn't be treated as such. We know that addiction is a chronic disorder of the brain, and like all chronic diseases, it is prone to relapse. So we also know that there are certain parts of the brain that are specifically affected by addiction. And there's a kind of a three-phase way of looking at the process of addiction and which parts of the brain are affected by addiction. So we've got three phases, and they are binging, and then we've got the withdrawal phase, and then we've got the lack of control phase. And we know that binging or liking of drugs, that happens in a structure called the basal ganglia. We know that the withdrawal phase, when people feel really absolutely awful, that's mediated by a structure in the brain called the extended amygdala, and in particular within that, the habenula, which is really the nucleus that makes you feel awful. It's the misery nucleus. And then we know that in the prefrontal cortex, if you've got an exposure to addictive substances, you've got preoccupation, craving, and anticipation, and you've also got poor decision-making. And so that's found in the prefrontal cortex. So here we have three phases, binging, withdrawal, and poor decision-making and craving, and they've each got their own seat in the brain, not the soul. So it's not, addiction's not a religious issue. It's in the brain. It's a chronic disease of the brain. So specifically, if we look at this in more detail, the neuroadaptation of liking, drug liking, binging. So again, this is all about an increase in dopamine in the nucleus accumbens, which is related to the basal ganglia. This allows us to feel not only the pleasure of the drug, but also more perfidiously, the pleasure of even thinking about the drug. So we're also talking here about cue-based anticipatory dopamine rushes as well. And then we have to think about the next phase, which is the withdrawal. So the extended amygdala makes us feel absolutely awful, not only when we are without the substance in question, but it also worsens our experience in causing or during a withdrawal. And it's not uncommon for patients to say that they used to start off their journey into addiction with enjoying the drug, with binging on it. It was fun. And then over time, they need to start using the drug to prevent the withdrawals. And so there's this kind of reward. So if initially it's a positive reward, so it's fun. And then that reward to that stimulus then becomes a negative reward in the sense that continued drug use removes the withdrawal symptoms. And almost, it's a bit like the difference between impulsivity and compulsivity. So we have got impulsive use followed by compulsive use. And I would actually argue that compulsive use really is a mark of dependence. And then we have finally the prefrontal cortex. So we know that chronic substance use exposure can actually make changes in the brain that reduce our ability to think straight. And as Oscar Wilde said, I can reduce anything but temptation. So in that situation, we make poor choices. We're not able to meet our role obligations, and therefore our relationships suffer. And these are two key symptoms that that are required as part of the DSM-5 diagnostic criteria for substance use disorder. So hopefully in this vignette, I've explained why we have addiction. It's an increase in dopamine in the nucleus accumbens. I've explained the risk factors for addiction, i.e. we've got genetics, we've got the environment, and we've got the drug itself. And now I have explained the actual physiology of binging, withdrawal, and poor decision-making as it applies to various parts of the brain. I hope you've enjoyed, and I look forward to chatting with you again very soon. My name is Dr. Fergal Armstrong, and this has been Cracking Addiction. Oh,